Oh, no, it's not.
So I'll wrap that around. Where is it?
Hey guys, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for having me. I'm just going to tell you a little bit about what my journey has looked like so far in life, and start off just telling you about. I was raised in the Fort Worth area and New Jersey. We moved from that area when I was a kid, and I was an only child till about 10. Raised in a Lutheran home that. My dad was very active in the church. It was a very formal church, very kind of old school Wisconsin Lutheran. And I went to the private schools. I had a good educational background in what the Bible looked like and all the stories. Actually, we had the highest score on the test last night, and that's why. Because I was drilled in. We didn't have nuns, but close. When I was 10 years old, my family started to adopt, and which one of the greatest blessings that ever could have come into my life. I got to experience at 10 years old a little bit maybe what it's like to be a parent, because they say you can't really understand what it's like to truly love until you see your child, right? When my brother came off the plane, a little kid, he walked up and he had a picture of me, and he unfolded it. And he looked at it, and he looked at the picture, and he looked at me, and he ran and jumped in my arms. He was 2.5 years old. And I loved him instantly. There was no downtime there. So my family grew that way. And when I was about 12 years old, my father had started traveling a lot. And wasn't quite getting the attention I used to get from him. And now there's 3 other kids. And in that 2 years, they adopted 3 children. And I remember going to my mom one day, and I asked her if my dad had a girlfriend, and she and her answer was odd. Probably, she said, "I don't know," which you'd have thought maybe she'd have said no, but she said, "I don't know." And kids are perceptive, and from that point on, I started kind of trying to get my dad's attention, because I didn't really understand what any of that meant, but I just was going to get his attention. The best way for me to get his attention was to behave badly. Good attention didn't really get it. That just kind of begot a little bit. Well, why didn't you do a little bit better? So I started to behave badly, and we moved back to Texas, and bad grades wasn't really enough, and I was starting to feel just like I wasn't good enough. There was nothing I could do to be good enough, no matter what I did. And I was actually a pretty successful martial artist at the time, and started fighting on some pretty high teams and started making junior Olympic teams and things like that, and fighting at a national level. And when I was 15 years old, my dad was gone. He would kind of come in and out, and due to affairs or whatever, and so he'd leave for a period of time and decide that was going to be his new life. And so it was me and my mom and these 3 little kids, and I discovered the liquor cabinet. And I remember my mom was gone at maybe a soccer tournament or something with my little siblings, and I was quite a bit older than all of them, and I got into it, and I'd seen a lot of ads for spring break and stuff, and Jose Cuervo seemed to be the thing at the time, and I saw that, and I said, well, that's what I'll try. And I can tell you, the moment I tried it, I felt a freedom I had never felt before. I mean, I was all of a sudden good enough. The voices slowed down, and the chatter kind of stopped clanking quite so loud in my head, and I felt like I could kind of puff out my chest and raise my head a little bit. And so I had a big party with all my friends, and it was a disaster, as you can imagine. And I woke up the next day, and I was so sick for almost 24 hours that I just couldn't even hold my head up. And for a lot of people, that would be enough. That would have said, you know what, I'm done with this. For me, it wasn't even a deterrent. It was, maybe I just won't drink that again. So I continued to chase that satisfaction over the next couple of years, and then I discovered a girl that that would sleep with me, and that became the next level of satisfaction that I needed. So those two things combined, I now had a winning combination that I would chase way into adulthood, and that was going to be drinking and women. And they both made me feel good and for a period of time. And when I didn't feel good a little bit later, I just went and got more of each. So went on, and when I was 23 years old, as you can imagine, I had some mixed success in school and business and everything else, and I'd never gotten my degree. So at one point, I decided I was going to go to seminary. That ended in a ball of flames. I stopped at the prep school that my brothers were at on the way up to the seminary and bought their friends alcohol. Part of the negotiation to keep me out of trouble there was, well, if he gets some help, you know, we'll keep him out of trouble there. So, but really, that was just an extended counseling session. So, when I was 23, I moved on. I was going to go out and do a geographical change and go out to West Texas, and that would kind of fix everything. And partway through my schooling there, I decided to start a landscaping company. So I did that, kind of grew it into a commercial operation. I was fairly handy at getting a business going and really entrepreneurial, and grew that into a commercial operation. And next thing you know, school went by the wayside. Well, I met a girl through a friend. It was his little stepsister, and she was quite a bit younger than me. And I was 26 years old at the time. And although, like I said, I was hitting some pretty rocky roads, she was young enough. She thought I was awesome. She thought I was great. She just think that I was, you know. And she didn't know any better. She had never really been fathered, and so, you know, in her mind, I was just kind of a great deal. And off we went. A year later, we were living together, and so we dated for the next 5 years, and eventually ended up getting married. And that was the next logical step. That's what you do, right? And what had happened was her father had become like a father to me that I desperately desired and wanted in my life. And even though I was kind of a screw up, he loved me, and he was a successful businessman, and he thought I was great. And her mom became kind of like a mom to me. And going up to the wedding, I knew I shouldn't be doing this. I didn't know exactly why, but I knew I shouldn't be doing this. But I wasn't willing to let them go, the idea of that go, because I had no real integrity and understanding of what that meant. I wasn't strong enough to turn around and say, you know what, we're going to just stop this process right here. And I definitely had no one to turn to and talk to about it. So, is that a little loud? So we got married, and what's the next logical step after that? Yep. So we had a baby. And that was going to solidify us, make us, you know, more of a family and all that. We were living down in Houston at that time, and got married. And as anybody in here knows, I'm sure most of you know, that doesn't fix anything. It just amplifies and brings out even more issues. At that point, I was starting to drink even heavier. I had a real wandering eye for other women. None of those things had changed. Just my circumstances had changed, but what was going on inside of here had not changed at all. So, still the same man. And she told me, hey, we're done. We're done here. I'm not doing this anymore. You know, up to that point, I couldn't understand it. I mean, I was overweight, drinking heavily, looking at other women, and she wouldn't sleep with me. So I became verbally abusive and told her what, you know, that she wasn't meeting up to her wifely duties. So I was truly shocked. I mean, and I mean that. I'm not being sarcastic. I was shocked when she told me we were done. You know, why wouldn't you want to be with this prince among men? And so so I went out, went and stayed at a friend's house, and she called me and said, hey, I'm going to church the next morning. She went to a woman's retreat. She said, I'm going to church the next morning, and if you want to meet us there, that'd be fine. So I, of course, stormed in like a Napoleon coming back to Alba the next morning into my home, and I saw the opportunity, because I remember I'd been raised in the church. I understood what it said, and that she was to be submissive to me and all these things. So now I had an in. I mean, oh, she's going to see the church and find out that I'm right. So I stormed in. Well, we're going to go to church together, and, you know, we're going boom, boom. So we went there. But what happened is she became more resolved in that I wasn't the guy, and I became more resolved in that she wasn't the gal. And but what I did see at that church was I saw a group of guys that I didn't really understand. I started hanging out with some of them, and I got an opportunity to hang out with a guy named Tom and something called Operation Timothy. And Tom and I started hanging out, and I wasn't very faithful in the process. He was. But you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And that adage was kind of coming true. But I had enough desire that I wanted to keep bumping up against him. I figured if I hung out with him enough and these other guys, maybe I'd become righteous as well. And they invited me to a men's retreat. And I went to it, and I just remember listening to this guy that was the guest speaker. It wasn't Ron, it was a different guy. And he gave his story, and I remember thinking, this guy's horrible. I mean, he is just horrible, and he's leading the whole men's retreat. Like, well, I don't understand what's going on. Like, he's me. You know, this is, but he looks nothing like me. I mean, there's a story of a guy that looks like me, but I can't even see it in this guy because he had been transformed. So I went up to him afterwards, and I just said, I don't understand what you're talking about. I just don't get it. And he asked me, you know, some questions, and asked me if I wanted something different in my life. And I said, yeah, I absolutely want something different in my life. When I left that retreat, I was talking to Tom, and he said, you made a commitment here, but when you leave here, it's going to seem like it's not all just going to turn around immediately. It seems like that. I want you to understand, you got to start pouring in. So I went out, and what I did, my answer to that was, I just kept feeling this tug towards the Lord, but I drank more. I wanted to quiet it. I didn't understand what I was hearing and what I was feeling and what I was thinking. But what I knew was, from that point, is I saw a group of guys that were humble, that at varying levels of success, were joyful, that were suffering from illnesses. One of the guys was having his leg amputated, and he was one of the most joyful guys I'd ever met. I could not figure out for the life of me, where is this coming from? Like, that's not what makes someone happy. At the time, I was working at Merrill Lynch, and, there's a lot of guidelines when you're handling people's money, and I was taking alcohol to work with me. I would go out to my car. I would go to a men's Bible study every Monday night, and as soon as I got in the car, I'd get out the water bottle. There wasn't water. Things were getting to a velocity that no way were going to be sustainable in life. And I was in so much pain. I started to get sick. I had physical manifestations of what was going on. And so I started denying time with my daughter. And I just said, I can't take the baby anymore. My daughter was just 2 years old. And for about 2 weeks, I did that. And when I realized that I was maybe never going to see my daughter again, see, God has a funny way of knowing exactly what will bring us to our knees. And for me, it was a little girl named Caroline. And so I cried out. I was sitting there drunk, kind of. I don't know, Thursday, whatever, it didn't matter. Every day was a drinking day for me. And I was drunk, it was the middle of the day, and I was in an apartment that looked nothing like the life I had pictured. And I just cried out. And I said, what the hell do you want from me? I've given you my life. I've turned it over. My version of it. And I don't know what you want from me, but what do you want? And it may not have been an audible voice, but it was the loudest thing I'd ever heard. And he just said, I've told you twice before. And he had. I'd heard this specific thing before. He said, I've told you twice before, and I'll tell you one more time. I've brought you as far as I will until you quit drinking. And I said, fine. And I'd never responded that way. I said, fine. What do you want me to do? And he said, you know what you have to do. So I picked up the phone, and I called my buddies, and I went through the usual, if I do this, will you still be my friend? Will you still go fishing with me? Will you still do all this? And what I really found is, don't call your drinking buddies if you want to quit drinking. They're really good. Most of my drinking buddies were really good salesmen and stuff, as you can imagine, and they're very good advocates for why not. So what happened was I in the midst of talking to one of them, he said, well, you just need to dry up. Pass this, pass your Series 7 and all that, and finish this divorce, or she's going to take your daughter away from you, and you're never going to see her. I'm telling you, this is how it's going to go. But God had already spoken to me. And I just said, we're too late for that. And God spoke to me one more time that day, and he said, I've already put the men in your life that you need to call. I hung up the phone, and I called that guy, Tom. And much to his shock, you know, we weren't drinking buddies. He said, well, what do you want me to do? I said, I don't know, but I got to go somewhere. I need help, and you're the only guy I know to call. He said, okay. So he showed up to my house several hours later. And here's the thing. I had drank for 23 years, and I had full bottles of vodka at my house. I had a nice supply. From the moment that God spoke to me that day, I never picked up another drink, and still haven't to this day. But that day, I sat there with the only medicine I knew that had worked for 23 years, and I left it sitting on the counter because now something more powerful had spoken into my life. The only thing that could actually be more powerful than that medicine spoken into my life. So, thank you. Thank you, Jesus. So Tom had been advised that, I'm a bit bigger than Tom, that I may try to run or resist. So he came in and he said, grab your bag and get in the truck. He'd never spoken to me that way, and we didn't have that kind of relationship. I said, oh, all right. So I got up, and I went and got in the truck, and we got to the facility, and I'm looking across this parking lot, and I bent down, and I got on my, I just kind of bent across my knees, and I said, Lord, give me the strength. It was the, I stood up, and a guy named Paul told me, he said, your eyes were so clear. He said, you were just, it was like you're happy. About 2 weeks into the extended counseling session, a group of the counselors sat around, and they said, we've never seen a guy, we've done this for years, we've never seen a guy come in that was so happy. I don't understand how you were so happy. Like, what was going on with you? I said, I was free. For the first time in my life, I was able to understand what it says in Galatians 5:1. It says, for freedom I've set you free. Do not be conformed to the yoke of slavery. I was free. So what next? Did my marriage automatically get saved? Did I become an instant saint and all that? No, but what did happen is something started to change inside of me. My divorce did go through, but I started to be able to look at things in life. You know, it says that he that's forgiven little loves little. Well, I've been forgiven a ton, and I knew it now. I hadn't fully accepted it. I believe that Jesus Christ is real. I believe that, but it hadn't fully become my reality yet. But I started to learn to love. And what I started to do is it was like I was holding 99 balloons. And it was kind of my past and these things that I wanted to control in my life. And I started to let them go. And, the big ones were, the drinking and this and that. And eventually I let go of chasing women and doing this and doing that. And it was that process that Christ was so gently taking me through, so lovingly taking me through. What happened next was I ended up through occasional golf tournament here or there. I met a guy and I'd bump into him, and I don't know why, but he just always, I was drawn to him. I was drawn to him. And every once in a while I'd call him and ask him a question, and he'd patiently answer the question. I'd say, okay, well, I'll call you in a week or so. A year later, I'd call him. This went on for a couple of years. One day he said, would you like to meet with me? I said, yeah, I'd like to meet with you. That was about a year ago, I think. And we started meeting together, and I'd seen a book, and on the cover it said, God's not mad at you. And I remember thinking, that is true. And what happened with this guy is he started taking me kind of through and showing me that I am whole, and not because of anything I'd done, not because I'd quit drinking, not because I'd given up women, not because of anything I'd done, but I was truly whole because Jesus Christ said I was whole. And he showed me that he loved me, no matter who I was, what I'd done in my past. And I had never felt that kind of love from a guy. Not a guy that was specifically talking to me, not a guy that didn't come up and say, hey, I'll pray for you, or all this and that. And that was all fine too. But this guy faithfully wanted to meet with me every week and spend time with me and treat me like a son. And the guy became like my spiritual father. I started being able to read the Bible in a way that I never read it before. And what I was able to read was that the words were real. that there was words like shall, will, this. Isaiah 41:10 says, fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. I will do this. These promises became real in my life, and I realized that I could trust them, that I could believe them. I had the opportunity to start reconciling, and the first person I reconciled with was God. Then I started reconciling with my mother. I had the opportunity for her to come live with me. She got very sick. My mother and I did not have that kind of relationship. I was a representation of my father. I had an opportunity to reconcile with her and now take care of her and love her in an unconditional way. I got to reconcile with my daughter. Whether she understands it fully or not, truly say, I'm sorry and forgive me for bringing this into your life. I got to start reconciling with my ex-wife. I love her in a way today that I did not love her when we were married. I love her deeply and unconditionally. And then I got to start reconciling with myself. And that's hard. But it was necessary. Because if I can't receive the forgiveness that Christ has for me, and if I forgive myself, then that pain was just going to continue. But I don't have to do that anymore. Sorry. Let me flip here. When I started looking at things like Proverbs, and I said, every word of God proves true. He is a shield to those who take refuge in Him. I started looking at Revelation 3:20. It says, behold, I stand at the door and knock. Whoever hears me, I will come in and dine with him and he with me. And I started thinking, you'll do that for me? You want to come in and eat with me? I heard someone say one time, this lady said, I know Jesus is real. Because, and I think she said because my son was healed or because he got a job or something. And I knew something had truly changed because I sat there and I thought, no, that's not why Jesus is real. I understand for her. I know Jesus is real because he was born. He's the Son of God. He was born and became man. He lived a perfect life. He was crucified on a cross. He died. He was raised again from the dead. Over 500 people saw him. It's a historical fact, and I can believe it. And that's how I know Jesus Christ is real. And that's how I know I can believe all these promises. And that's what my life looks like today. Thanks.